If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, so Dan Mugford gets just under 160 kilograms clean and over his head.
Wow. That's
unbelievable.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
Bit of CrossFit / Olympic lifting chat to start the podcast. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, I'm Tim with JB.
Hello, Tim.
Footless and OnlyFans ready.
Footless? Jesus.
Legless, footless.
shoeless and OnlyFans ready. And Phil.
Hello, Tim. Hello. JB.
Right, the not only the only rugby podcast that is there for you 52 weeks of the, well, I was going to say, no, not the only rugby podcast that is there for you every single Monday without fail, making sure you get your rugby fix to start the week, but the only podcast that is there for you 52 weeks of the year for very nearly 10 years. A lot of people putting their feet up at this point.
Yeah, lazy.
Grassroots,
and there's so much rugby going on.
Grassroots part-timers.
Exactly.
This is where we separate ourselves from the pack, and if you appreciate the fact that there is still rugby chat in your feed, please hit subscribe if you haven't already, wherever you get your podcasts. Please tell a mate. And if you want to help keep the lights on, go to patreon.com/eggchasers for more content and to support the pod. As JB said, there's lots of rugby going on. We just sat, though, and tried to watch the French top 14 playoff between Lyon and Bordeaux, which we're about, it's about,
well, the
just approaching half-time now.
Yeah.
Which is on Viaplay, as we understood it. Which you have a subscription for, JB.
Yep.
As a result of your legacy annual subscription to Premier Sports, which you never watched.
No. Nope.
We tried to watch it and we couldn't find it. It wasn't on.
No, but it's on record later.
Well, yeah.
So I can watch it, but not live, it seems.
Yeah, they're replaying it. It seems like 10:30 a.m. tomorrow. They might be replaying it at other times as well.
Ugh.
But currently they've got NASCAR.
Barcelona.
Spanish football. Spanish football, I mean, and Italian football.
Spanish and Italian football, I can understand, would have a greater audience.
Do you think? And, yeah, probably.
Yeah, no,
probably,
it would.
Yeah,
it would.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's...
Do you know what's going to be a death knell for... I mean, I don't know how this is going to work exactly, but if BT Sport got hold of the rights for French rugby, that would be a serious problem for Premiership rugby. Because you've got the same broadcaster with two leagues, and one is going to be much, much superior.
Well, BT Sport will not. It will be called TNT next season.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be DAZN.
DAZN.
No, Warner Brothers Discovery have purchased the rights and effectively will be taking on the broadcast rights that BT Sport held.
Uh-huh.
So all
and
of,
hold
all of it's like Champions League and
as I understand
yeah,
it, yes.
Yeah.
So it'll be TNT Sports and. Yeah, and there'll be a change of hands of the production company, which make the quality of Buzz 16, which is Gary Neville's company.
Is that right?
Yeah,
oh, hang on. Gary Neville's got some strange views, but he's actually I'm mixed on him.
Oh no, he's got fingers in all sorts of pies, and he's a very astute man.
Will you have Gary Neville as mayor of Manchester?
I think he's excellent at what he does.
I think I might consider him as mayor of Manchester.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to get anyone better than Burnham. So
you know, by Old Trafford Cricket Ground, he's got a university.
UA
92. He tried to build a campus down the road here. So I live in a very sort of left-leaning, right, well, we all do, right? Right on, you know, houses for all, kind of area.
Oh yeah, houses for all.
Houses
except
for all.
Just not in not my backyard.
Not in my backyard. Like
classic NIMBYs.
So, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So every not. Time they launch, so Gary Neville,
like Phil with the South Shark Stadium.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I'm the opposite to Phil. So we've got these beautiful meadows and the Mersey runs through it. Gary Neville wanted to build his campus down there. I thought, yeah, build now. Like, if you really want to vote the way that you do over here, and you want all the campaigns that you have, build houses for poor people on those meadows today. That's exactly yeah. what I want. Actually, knock it all down.
The reason that they wanted to keep that is because some people take their dogs for a walk.
Yeah.
Which is
crazy.
Which is fine, except there must be legitimately 100 or 150 other acres yeah. surrounding
yeah,
it
yeah, yeah.
where dogs it's, can if you, quite yeah, happily walk.
If you want to vote for fairness, by all means do so, but we need to bulldoze those meadows.
How did we get here? Oh, yes. Gary Neville's company.
Gary Neville's
production company will be looking after the Premiership next season.
Oh, that's interesting.
And from the... disgrace of us not being able to watch the top 14. We could have watched it yes. pre-pod and then spoken about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So do you want to know the score currently?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
It was 12-8.
I think 14-8. 14-8, yeah.
And there's at least one ex-Premiership player playing.
Lima Sopawanga.
Indeed.
Converted yeah. the try for Josh Tuasova and the other try from Ethan Demortier.
Yeah, and Jalibert has scored the points for Bordeaux on yes. the other side.
Try and a penalty. So exciting.
And another... former Premiership player in Tom Willis, starting at 8 for Bordeaux.
Yeah.
And Santiago Cordero.
It's and a great league.
Yeah, so I was watching...
And Vadim Kobolas.
Still going.
Oh, yeah,
still going tight head, yeah.
So let's just reflect on what we've been...
Santiago Cordero, did you say him?
Yes, yeah.
So let's just reflect on Vadim Kobolas, because people might have forgotten about him. But when he played for Sale Sharks, the last time that we checked, at least, they had not lost one of their own scrums... all season when he played tight head. Vadim Kobolas, Phil made an ill-conceived joke in front of
Will Addison.
Will Addison. Will yeah. Addison was absolutely astonished. So the joke was something along the lines of, what was it, Phil?
It was just
a little offhand remark.
It was shortly after, do you remember Vadim Kobolas attempted a drop goal and scuffed it? And it yeah. was something, it was like a reference back to that like, oh, there's... He said something like, oh,
something like handling drills. Keep
yeah, yeah, away from... yeah, something about skills. And I like kind of joked that Vlad Kolblash would not have very good skills. And Addison...
It looked like you said something bad about his mother.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the most skillful players in the whole team. He's the best at yeah. table tennis. Yeah.
And he nailed a drop goal at international level for Moldova.
Not only is he the best at table tennis, I'm the best scrummager. Remember Jonathan Mills? I mean, remember Jonathan Mills, but...
Millsy.
Yeah, the listeners might not remember Jonathan Mills. London Welsh, Llanethli, play at Sale Sharks. And he was talking about Vladimir Kobolas and says, comfortably the best... He would be laughing at you as he pinned you down. Like, the guy is a force of nature. And here he is in a... Well, it must be like 8 years since he left.
Yeah.
Propping up a scrum in the French playoffs in the hardest league in the world. And he must be 40-something. He must be 40.
He's listed... Oh, yeah. He's listed at 39 years old.
There you go.
Wow.
Speaking of old props, yeah, and he's 39. He is 40 in July.
Yes,
he's 1 month from being 40.
Well, talking of old props of older gentlemen.
Well, I was going to say old props.
Oh, go on.
Sticking with the props. Did you see who was starting for the Crusaders against my beloved Hurricanes this weekend?
Oh, that's a good question.
At tight head prop,
I'm going to say, is it a Coles brother or something?
It's not. Not one of the Frank's brother.
So someone, sorry, Frank's brother.
Someone
sorry.
Old. I'm trying to think. Tight head prop.
Yeah.
Old. Not the guy that was at Newcastle and Toulon and stuff. No.
He's a coach. And he's Carl also
Heyman.
Got dementia.
Carl Heyman. Yeah. I'm trying to think of old props.
He's got lots of other issues. Yeah. Lots of reasons why he would not be playing that game.
Yes. It wouldn't go down too well with the lawsuits. Should he be found playing?
Oh, right. Okay.
So
yeah.
No,
I don't know who.
I've got no idea.
He was playing Premiership until last year.
Oh, is it the guy who went to Ulster for a little bit?
Yes.
Oh, I can't remember. He's from Wellington, and he got paid an absolute fortune, never played for Wasps.
He's from Auckland, played for the Blues.
Oh, Tumanga Allen.
Tumanga Allen was who I was thinking of.
No. Not Jeff Tumanga Allen. He's still at Ulster.
Oh,
yeah.
I know.
He was Auckland and Blues. Then he won a World Cup in 2011 with New Zealand. Then he went to my beloved Ulster. Then Gloucester. Then Bristol.
Oh, John Afoa.
John Afoa.
Getting it done.
Yeah, he turns 40 later this year as well.
Good lad.
What a boy.
For the Crusaders.
I thought he stayed at, I thought the whole point of John Ofoa was staying at Bristol to become a coach.
No. He went to Van.
Still got lead in the pencil.
Yeah. Probably, presumably on...
Not imagine if he makes the World Cup squad.
Pro did.
So, yeah, well, there's another guy I was going to give an honourable mention to this week.
Older gentleman.
Yep. Not dead yet. Jimmy Gopeth.
Has he got a club?
Yeah, he's going to Pro did.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
I want to say... It's not Carcassonne. It's... Yeah,
I've said this before. I don't like saying pro de deux.
Pro de deux.
I probably said pro de two.
If Carl Fern says pro de deux, I'm saying pro de deux.
Okay, fine. So did you see? Did you catch any of the other playoffs? Firstly, how wicked is the access match, the promotion relegation playoff?
For top 14.
It is good.
The team, Grenoble lost their effort to try and get into the top 14. They finished second top in pro de deux.
And
Perpignan finished second bottom. Perpignan won 19-33, but really exciting. And I just don't understand. At the very least, even if you want to keep it cartel like, and you insist on it being, we should never have a totally closed league, in my humble opinion. And at the very minimum, you should have this.
Well, we're going to disagree on that, but I think there's merits to both systems, and the French system does. It is outstanding. It is outstanding. I mean, I saw the highlights of Racing versus Stad. Mm. I couldn't really tell him much about the game other than this,
other than perfect Kremers. Imperfect clear out.
Yeah, so that kind of leads me on something else for a bit later. But just watching the celebrations of the Racing players and just looking at like the stadium that they played in and the numbers of the crowd and the excitement. I mean, this is the future. The more popular this gets, the more money it has, the more it attracts the best players. I don't know how anything survives in the shadow of the top 14, and particularly the Premiership. The Premiership is so screwed.
And just on that, in terms of the spectacle of that game, to see it in that stadium with, like you mentioned, with the quality of the changing rooms and the quality of the kits. Like those two kits.
Yeah. Stash was exceptional.
Everything looks like, right, doesn't it?
It looks so good seeing that. I guess the closest in the Premiership, and it's nowhere near in the same league in terms of the colour palette, but it would be probably Bath versus Leicester.
Yes.
The white and blue and the British Racing green with red and white. Mm. That is historic. Beautiful, historic. But they're not in the same league as the two Parisian clubs. With the pink and blue and the white.
When I watched the URC final and the quarterfinal and the semi-finals this year, like, it was obvious that the URC are thinking about other things in the Premiership. I'm not thinking about things because the Premiership have got a big issue on their plate, which is survival. Like, survival.
They are right now.
So
just trying to run a league.
Probably not that surprising, is it, that when none of the clubs make any money, thinking about the kit is not high on their priority, or thinking about innovations within the game is not. They literally just want to know how many teams are going to play in the professional league next year, because they don't know. Yeah. They don't know what the format is. They don't know who's going to be there. You know, I don't think they know anything.
Just on that with the Premiership, but what? So we can get on to London Irish in a minute. We might as well stick with the positives and the French top 14. But I don't understand why it has to be such an unknown. Could they not, the people that are planning next season, just plan one eventuality with London Irish involved? One eventuality without London Irish. Just plan both.
So scenario planning,
it's
not that difficult.
No.
Yeah. Like
the London Irish situation as well, it's not really a spectrum, it's binary. They will either exist or they will not exist. Like, and based on what we're hearing at the moment, it probably looks fairly predictable that they will not exist.
Yeah, and
at least as a Premiership entity.
And the saying the quiet part out loud, the Premiership don't want them there. And the RFU don't want them there. Now, it doesn't have to be London Irish. It could be Newcastle. They don't really care. But they want 10 teams. And to be fair to them, it does make sense. I mean, we've seen what an odd league looks like, and it doesn't work. So you do need an even number of teams. I think 12 would be fine. 12 would be fine. Or 10. I don't really mind. Or 12. I think 12 is about right. I think 14 is too many. 12 is okay. But, it's difficult. It's really difficult. So you've got London Irish who are struggling to stay afloat. And quite frankly, the authorities want them gone. they've issued this extension, but I think it's mostly so they can say, oh, look, we've done everything possible, but it is now time to go. They are waiting desperately for London Irish to go.
Tuesday is the deadline when, I mean, they've now had a tax bill that's arrived from HMRC, which usually only happens when there's a thought from that administrators are going to be needed.
Yeah, administrators or liquidators.
Yes.
And from what I've read, got it in front of me at the moment, so a winding up petition was issued on Friday against London Irish Holdings and London Irish Rugby Football Ground Limited, which from HMRC in relation to this unpaid tax bill. You add that to the, well, 50% of the players' salaries were paid for the end of May, but that leaves 50% remaining.
God.
And initially the RFU said we will only make an extension if the 100%. Wages are paid. Mick Crossan sort of called their bluff a little bit and said 50%.
And the players said 50%
They went along with it because they were told if it's not 50%, yeah, it's nothing. It's done.
Yeah. So they the best scenario for the players is they get that 50% and then probably that's it. They're free to go wherever else they're going to go, albeit
their breach of contract letters will be already.
They'll be mostly.
Yeah, but they were told they can only have the 50% if they don't sign breach of contract letters.
Yes, correct.
How legal is that?
I'm not an employment lawyer, but
it doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah, it doesn't. Because if they're made to sign something to say it's not a breach, like it would be an alternative contract, which anyone can.
I guess from a player's point of view, it's kind of immaterial because if a takeover happens, they get paid everything on Tuesday, and if any of them were so unhappy they wanted to go, I bet London Irish probably wouldn't stand in their way.
Yeah,
but on the worst case scenario is that it's all irrelevant.
The RPA
2 days anyway.
Who I've said lots of times do lots of good things. I do think they're often caught short when it comes to players' salaries. I think the COVID thing was a great example of this, where they all agreed the reduction of the salary cap. In hindsight, I would never have done that. Never in a million years. And I think, again, like, what was the RPA view? Because I didn't hear anything from them. I didn't see any...
Their position, I think, was a bit like the players, 50% or nothing. Like, it's... For some of those clubs, there was a very real chance of you accept a lower salary... Or you will be getting no salary.
Yeah,
like it was real.
Where did the RPA get their kind of funding from?
The RPA get their funding from Premiership Rugby.
And the players, presumably.
I was going to say it should be from players.
Yeah, it's a very small subscription from players. But so when Premiership Rugby was first established, one of the things they did is started funding the RPA. Now I honestly don't think they're conflicted.
English rugby marking its own homework. Yeah. Never. We haven't seen that before.
Yeah, it was a genuine attempt, I think, to do something good. But players should be paying for their own union. Mm. So there was an alternative union proposed. Ellis Genge was involved with this, and the players had to pay a percentage of their salary for this new union, and they just said no. So it's all very well saying to the players like, okay, well, there's a new union here. Do you want to join it? It's going to cost you 2% more. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Don't want to do it.
And you're trying to... I seem to remember Genji's sales pitch was, well, you'll get a lot more for that 2%. We'll give you, investment advice.
It's an investment, not a spend.
So they were thinking of all sorts. They were thinking of investment advice, as Phil's saying, like financial planning. Mm. You know, I mean, I'm sure the RPA do some things like this as well, and I'm sure they'd be the first to say that, but it was... I'm just trying to think who was involved in that. There was Greg Bateman. There was...
Because it was the Leicester Genge boys. Genge had already left.
I think Will Carlin had a role in it in some form.
That's interesting because he's involved in England, or certainly was involved in the England setup.
Yeah, I seem to remember Will Collins' involvement was the end of it. And there was another couple of players. So if you go back to the COVID times,
please.
But it was the players that refused pay rises. You can find them there. And Greg Bateman was. By the way, I've not heard a thing out of Greg Bateman since. Is he even playing?
No idea. But yes, it's looking bleak for London Irish again. As we said last week, hope there's an 11th hour solution, but it doesn't sound like it. And what that means, no one knows. There's a lot of talk like, oh, they'll be back in a reformed championship along with Wasps and Worcester soon enough. There's a lot of that sort of chat. I can understand why people would say that. I don't like it, though. It's just...
Yeah.
Bottom of the pyramid for you guys. Sorry.
Off you go. Yeah. Has to be.
As it has been for Bedford. Was it Bedford? No, Richmond and West Hartlepool.
But of course.
London Scottish.
London Irish have got something else, haven't they? The Wild Geese. So the Wild Geese still exist, and they're level 7.
Yeah.
But they... I think they play out of Sunbury. So yes. That can be difficult for them.
Which is where all the mini rugby happens.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some backers, or if they want to... At least they've got somewhere to start with. I mean, they're 7 years away from the top, but...
We've already said last week, we don't need to go over it, but URC makes so much sense for London Irish.
Yeah, it does.
It really
actually does.
Someone
in the URC buys the rights to the branding of London Irish. You don't want to buy London Irish.
Yeah, you've got to... It's one of those positions where you've got to let them fail.
Mm.
You've got to let the debts be cleared off, or how written off, not cleared off, and then you buy the IP.
So someone,
basically,
someone,
and any decent training facilities or anything like that.
So someone got in touch with us this week to say JB doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not talking about the Championship being top league. I've never said the Championship would be the top league ever, ever. What I have said is the Championship will be the only unencumbered league by the awful CVC deal. And
it'll get wrapped up in the CVC deal.
Eventually.
It will.
But it's not, though, is it?
No, it's not. You're correct that it's not.
Yeah, it's not. So even if they came to an agreement, and I don't know how they come to this agreement, say a French-style agreement where the TV money comes in and there's X amount to the Championship and then Y amount to the Premiership. I don't know how that even works. Does CVC take one-third of that? Are they even allowed to do it? Would
you'd be signing a new contract with those...
But like a Championship with Wasps, Worcester... And London Irish starts to sound a little bit more like a proposition.
Yeah, alongside Ealing and Jersey and Doncaster and a few others.
Yeah, all forging their own way, which is exactly what I'd do. If I was in the Championship, I'd want nothing to do with the Premiership. at all. So, yeah. So, let's just talk about London Irish people a second. So
that's where I wanted to go. I wanted to look through the squad and talk about...
Oh, I was going to talk about the...
I definitely want to do what Phil suggested. Well,
I'll do what you want to do first.
So, I was trying to work out who is trying to buy London Irish. Does anyone actually know?
It's Ray Davis and a consortium of American...
Who is Ray Davis?
The Baltimore Ravens linebacker.
You mean...
Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis.
Sorry. Davis was I don't know if he's still alive, the front man and main songwriter in the Kinks.
Ah, right. So so to be clear, Ray Davis is involved or not?
Ray Davis is not involved, although he's a Londoner, so that would yeah. And he's very wealthy, so maybe Ray Davis.
Maybe Ray Davis meets Ray Lewis, and that's a real
thing. Oh, you're talking.
So, is Ray Lewis involved? I've heard that Allen Iverson is in there. And
basketball player.
Yep, and there's Matembe. Oh, I can't remember his name.
I watched, just on basketball, and Iverson just reminded me, I watched Air last night. It's really good.
Is it?
That Matt Damon film about signing Jordan to Nike.
I would
really
watch
good.
That.
It's really
I'd
good.
I'd definitely watch
it's
that.
It's good, because I was like, I know what the ending to this film is. But they still made it really good.
Have you read Shoe Dog?
No.
Definitely read Shoe Dog.
Oh, okay,
it's
cool.
It's really good. It's really, really, and it's so easy to read. It's the story of Phil Knight. And Nike.
Cool.
But it's written, I think it's a ghostwriter, but it's written like him telling his memoirs. But it's worth it.
I took JB
really
off
enjoy it.
Interesting.
So Allen Iverson.
Right. So that is a consortium. Now they're linked to I don't know exactly who the private equity fund is. I don't know if that private equity fund is just what they've set up. Right. It could be no one. But they're getting advised by a group called Red Strike. Now, this is where it gets interesting. So Red Strike is an agency based in America.
It sounds like something that's going to be on the newspaper that we're sending to Ukraine soon.
yes, it does. It's an air launch missile. Red Strike is advising them, but they're not part of the consortium. So I don't know how this works or exactly what's going on, but it sounds to me. And there are people far more informed than me on this, that the consortium have basically got someone with a bit of heft behind them who've done this before to advise them. Now, Red Strike themselves have not ever bought a club, but they are kind of linked to a company called 777 Group. And they have bought clubs, so they were interested in buying Everton for $600 million and Hertha Berlin, and I think they've got a few other...
Are they a betting-related company?
They're not. They're just a US investment company. I think they might have bought London Basketball, of all things. So they are they are legitimate. Now, if it was with those people that were buying London Irish, you go, yeah, now that's interesting, but it's not. This consortium is different to them, but employing the employing the same advisors. So it's all a bit mixed up, like, who are these people? Now, one of the reasons you know that maybe this consortium are not the most keyed into rugby is because they've chose ex-premiership head of comms as their spokesperson, which is probably why we've heard nothing from them or know nothing about the details. But that is crazy because, I mean, what does anyone know about this stuff?
Well, it's not happening, so...
Not a lot.
Nothing. Would you like to know a funny story about the comms situation there?
Yes, please.
allegedly, they were asked to comment on the RFU press release. Is there anything which you'd like to add to this press release regarding your takeover? The answer was, we've not seen the press release. Can you forward it to us, please? So this is who you're dealing with. So I don't think this consortium is serious, just for the fact that who they've appointed. And, doesn't look good. But there are some interesting characters and interesting people involved, but they seem to be one step removed.
Mm.
And that's a shame. And I think anyone serious in sport looks at the state of the Premiership and their current financial arrangements and like, we'll wait for you all to fail and we'll see what's left.
Yeah, pick out some of the IP, if any of it is worth anything after half the league fails.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what you would do.
You
just sit back and wait. You know, London Irish is nice, but maybe you want Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you want Bath. Maybe you want some other property.
Yeah. Yeah, Bath would be nice.
Wouldn't it be nice?
I think the Egg Chasers media could buy Bath if everything fails.
Well, I mean, theoretically, we could have bought Bath, right, London Irish,
here's
and
one,
Worcester.
Here's one. If there were spots on a... If there were a rugby monopoly board, which maybe we should actually do, an Egg Chasers monopoly board.
Yes.
Why should we should do that?
That's a good idea.
I don't know who you talked to about that. Is it Hal Bro or whatever? But...
You don't ask for permission, you ask for forgiveness.
But what would be Old Kent Road round to, and what would be Mayfair in Premiership rugby terms?
Okay, so Newcastle's...
Old Kent Road.
Yeah, it has to be, right?
Yeah.
And then Bath and Leicester or Mayfair and Park Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Now, how many properties are there? Is it...
I mean, there's 16 or 24 in Monopoly, I can't remember, but more than Premiership clubs.
Yeah.
There's more.
So it's five on one. It's five on two sides, and then 16.
16.
Isn't it? So
no, it'd be 22.
Five, 20. 22.
You got two fives.
Two brown.
Two fives and two sixes. So that's 10 plus 12 is 22.
22.
Plus then the four stations.
You don't need stations. Stations could be like Millennium Stadium.
28.
Properties. Yeah, Millennium Stadium, Twickenham, Murrayfield, and Aviva Stadium.
Yeah. So just for Premiership
Kingspan.
Teams.
Kingspan, sorry.
Premier
sorry,
Stadium
Phil.
On the island
so
of Ireland.
16 teams, so you'd have to go for the 13 Premiership teams who were last Premiership teams, and then three more.
Well, no, because you need 22.
You need 22, so yeah.
So the North Road is 5.
Yeah.
The East Road is...
6.
6.
Uh-huh.
South Road is 6.
Uh-huh.
West Road
five.
Is 5. So
16.
The Premiership would take two sides.
So
the Premiership would take two sides.
Sorry,
you'd still have ten teams left.
Yes, I got you, Phil.
Yeah.
Yeah. 22. So, 22. Yes. So you'd need to incorporate the Championship. And you might want to do... Who would you use?
Or you could use the British and Irish URC teams as well. Although, no, it's better with just England. I don't know. Anyway, we'll think on and work on it.
Yeah. Maybe rather than do it as like prestigious clubs, you do it in terms of regions. So maybe you group Bath, Bristol and Gloucester. That's what you do.
Oh,
and then
I
the
see.
London clubs. And then you'd have to have London clubs as Oxford Road. I don't know how you get Bath in there. Because Bath has to be Mayfair.
Bath has to be Mayfair.
Yeah.
And Tigers have to be Mayfair. And then everything else.
Park Lane and Mayfair, yeah.
Then you've got a nice set, haven't you, for the Midlands clubs. Like the two Midlands clubs could actually be Northampton, Leicester as Mayfair, Park Lane, but it has to be Bath. So,
Bath and Leicester has to be. It doesn't quite overlay particularly well.
No, it doesn't.
Need some thought. If you want to build this thing for us, build it for us.
I think if there's one thing we've learned about the interest in club rugby in England at the minute, no one would buy this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we would, but that would be
hypothetical.
It would be a
good Christmas present.
It would be a great Christmas
discerning,
present.
Discerning fan who likes rugby.
These exactly the sort of boardroom genius ideas that they needed in Premiership years ago.
100%.
As for what Phil was going to touch on, if you were another club circling, you could vulture the odd London Irish player, if you had a bit of money spare in your cap, who would fit where?
I bet Tom Pearson goes to Bath.
Bristol.
Do you reckon?
Tom Pearson will go somewhere. Like Tom Pearson is a very talented. There's a few boys.
Bristol were sniffing around Jack Willis, is what I heard.
Rightly so.
Yeah, they were.
And so Tom Pearson. Well,
Bristol sent Dan Thomas on loan to try and free up their cap space.
Correct.
But when Toulouse probably offered him close to his market
value.
He's
getting paid as much in Toulouse.
Yeah, yeah.
As he did Wasp and England combined.
Yeah.
He's not coming.
That does not surprise me at all, because he is a... There are certain players, like Tom Pearson is probably one of them, like Henry Arundel is probably one of them.
Arundel to Bath.
Who will make...
Yeah.
They're more valuable in France, though. Because Bath will have so much cap
Arundel
space.
Particularly in France, because he would be classed. He could be classed as a GIF player because he's young enough.
Still to tick
the academy box.
So I think with all these good London Irish players, and it's a boring thing to say because we all want to talk about them going to the Premiership, but this is the perfect time to go to France because Willis has done it. And we all know the exceptional circumstances clause is in action.
It's real, viable. Yep.
You've got to go to France.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're English, go to France because you can still play for England. And actually, I don't think you're particularly fancied if you play for London Irish anyway. It's not a fashionable club. Same way as if you play for Newcastle or Sale. So you go to France because you'll automatically be fancied then. Like the way that people talk about Zach Mercer, the way that people talk about... Tom Willis has become twice the player since he went to lose in the minds of
Bordeaux.
People who don't watch him.
Jack Willis.
Yeah. But yeah, you are right. Definitely now is the time to go to France. And I'd be astonished if several of them don't. So someone like Paddy Jackson, for example.
I mean,
he's already been to France.
He's Perpignan. It won't happen, but it would be such a good move in pure rugby terms if Paddy Jackson went to Ulster. It will never happen, obviously. But
It will never. I think it's probably right for both sides
to
happen.
I agree.
I'm very happy for it to...
In non-rugby terms, but in rugby-only terms, if I can just judge it on that, that would be the perfect fit because they need a 10. Ireland don't have depth at 10. They've got to go with Johnny Sexton afterwards, and he is probably the best Irish 10. But anyway, that's a whole...
Well,
some people will be very triggered by me even talking in pure rugby terms.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to have a conversation about just rugby things.
No, I don't know what happens to Paddy Jackson next. I mean, I think he wants probably to go to a French...
Well, there's rumours of Newcastle.
Oh, good God, no.
No.
Don't do it.
That would be a bad move for them.
Everybody.
Particularly if there's no relegation.
Well, just think about what this horrible woke culture has done to certain clubs. So, you know, just the fact that you have Paddy Jackson means that continuously... You get like hate attacks across social media. And look at what happened to Exeter. They've gone from everyone's second favourite club to still a whiff of something unsavoury about them because of all the attacks over the branding.
Courtney Laws having people trying to take out his Adidas sponsorship, checking his dad's
salary.
His dad's salary online.
There was a Twitter account the other day and it
outlined
all of the abuse and harassment that was levelled towards Israel Folau. Including buying a domain name called israelfalau.com. So if you look at Israel Folau, if you type into Google Israel Folau, someone's bought that domain name. And I think it doesn't...
Yeah, you know who.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Don't need to say it.
But like, it's just... The level of hatred is off the chart. So
anyway. I don't hate anybody as much as some of these people who claim to be about peace and love and...
It's
stuff.
Just harassment.
Like, you could just ignore.
This is a serious comment, right? And people think I'm going too far here. But like, what would make these people happy? Would it make them happy if they woke up one day and Paddy Jackson was dead? Because it feels like that's the level of hatred that they put towards him and Israel Folau. It feels like a sort of hounding that went on to like Caroline Flack and is probably going on to Philip Schofield now. I think it's that level of hatred that these people have for these players, and I can't get over it. I understand you didn't like what they did. But like 4 years on, and you're still going at it. It's very disturbing. Very disturbing.
It is very weird.
So for Paddy Jackson, I mean, just avoid the English speaking world and go to France.
Go back to France.
I completely agree.
More money, less hassle.
Racing need a 10.
They do. They're sniffing around Marcus Smith And there's
he looks like a Racing 10.
The talk for, the talk is for next year, but there's a thought that it could even be for September.
Mm. Well, do you know who I think is a Racing 10? I've said this so many times, and it just makes more and more sense the more I think about it. Post World Cup, Owen Farrell.
I actually think George Ford is probably more of a Racing 10.
Yeah, but George Ford, he fits in that Sale salary cap, right? Whereas I'm not sure the Saracens boys do. So Sale have got him on a long-term contract. They've got all their squads on sort of longish-term contracts. But at some point, Saracens are going to have to decide who they keep and who goes from the salary cap breach crew. They're all their England stars. So do they?
I'm sure, that's what they call themselves.
Yeah, exactly right. The salary cap crew. I don't think they can keep both Itoje and Farrell on market rates. So they have to make a decision which one goes.
It'd be interesting if they're grandfathered in with the double marquee players.
And just keep on extending those contracts.
Yeah, potentially. But at some point, not at some point, we know at the current plan point, not the season we're about to go into, the season after that, the salary cap increases to much closer to 7 million all in. So at that point, they only really need to survive one more year if that is the scenario.
But it's not so much a case of... So the problem they've got is not so much a case of can they pay those two boys individually, which I think they could in the new salary cap. Who else can pay them and what do they have to give up? And with the best will in the world, they're both amazing players, but are they worth not having a rest of a squad?
But they're also players who... I mean, Mario Itoje, he's 28 now. So he's very much in his prime, but he will not be around forever. He'll get this World Cup, he will get one more World Cup, and then... That might be it.
And
or
he's not.
He might be sensible to go and get look amazing for 4, 5, 6 years in the Racing 92 kit or the Stade Francais or the Toulouse kit.
He would
kit.
Look great.
Yeah.
He'd look great in whatever kit he wears. But those kits in particular, he'd look fantastic
in. The other thing about him as well is out of the two, he's the one I'd let go. The reason I'd let him go is he's basically a work rate player. His work rate is phenomenal. He's not a high skill guy. Like, you can kind of keep. You can kind of keep big second rows around for a long time because their core skill has been big. His core skill has been athletic and working hard. Mm-hmm. And those two things do decline. So if you're going to keep a fly half or a hard working second row, I keep the fly half.
Although Faz is 3 years older, so he's 31 now, he'll be 32 by the end of the year.
But he could potentially be the next Sexton.
He could, because he's ultra, ultra professional. He's never really needed speed.
Yep.
Never really had speed, therefore don't miss what you've not
I'm
got.
I'm very encouraged and comforted by how it feels like the narrative surrounding Owen Farrell from many, many rugby fans has completely shifted in the last few months. Do you remember how hated Owen Farrell was?
I think there's still a lot of people who do dislike him.
Look, I'm not a complete convert. I appreciate what he does well, and I appreciate how professional he is. Do I think he's a great leader? Not always. Sometimes he's amazing. Sometimes he is amazing. But he does have flaws in his game. He's not complete.
Yeah. He's sort of touching on this, actually, an email here. contactheadchasers@gmail.com from Adam Davis, who says, all right, cards on the table. I'm a Quinn season ticket holder. So we do strongly dislike Saracens. So I may well be blinded by this. Very honest of you to accept that and open up on that up front. He says, however, following on from what you guys said last week, as opposition fans, do we just have to accept these massively talented players are all taking a supposed pay cut to stay at the club? Quins have lost Marchant, Wilco Lowe, Tommy Allen this summer. I was looking at, and Bath and Sale have had to release about 15 players, and the less said about Exeter on that front, the better. With the salary cap going down, all the other clubs have had to make decisions about cutting players, squad size, etc. Yet Saracens have been able to announce all these players: George, Mako, Daly, Good, Earl.
Daly,
Maitland,
that's another one. He got cheap.
Lazowski, McFarland are all signing new deals. It's well known at Quins that we offered Tizard a decent contract, but Saracens came in and offered more cash. I admit, fair enough, Maylands is leaving, but they're still bringing in Tom Parton and Tom Willis, who can't be cheap, and there's still talk of Billy re-signing and Anthony Watson maybe joining. In a time of a reduced salary cap, how can you have a back row options of Earl Christie, Billy V, Tom Willis and Theo McFarland whilst having just one marquee player and still affording Farrell and Itoje?
Christie's class, but he is
homegrown.
Homegrown, isn't he? I reckon he'll be on the last year of a 3 year or a 2+1 or something like that, and he'll be on nothing. So that'll be the first one. Jackson Ray's gone. I suspect he's pretty well paid because he's always there or thereabouts.
And he's as I said the other week, he's an incredibly useful player because of his versatility, longevity, and he's never missed a game due to internationals.
If McFarlane's got a new deal, that will be substantially improved. Well, do you know, I bet his original deal wasn't
great. I bet his original deal wasn't great because he was a failed basketball player. Like, it's not hard to predict that a 6'6" Samoan boy is going to be fairly handy at rugby. But I was going to
use Theo McFarlane as the reason why is they, and I've spoken to people at Saracens about this, they have worked their nuts off as a coaching team to work on him because he was a long way off the finished article, still is a long way off the finished article, and they put in so much time to upskill him, get him ready. All like kickoffs and things like that, they've had to do so much work because he was not nearly good enough. So they're the best in the business at upskilling players. We've seen that with the way the number of players and the quality of players they bring through and the players that go to Saracens and kick on.
Yes. Because I want to talk about one of them.
And the players who they bring in from the Championship.
Richard Barrington.
Barrington, Chris Wiles.
Your mate from Sedgley.
Petrus Duplessis, multiple-time Champions Cup
winner. I think you're missing one of the greatest examples. And he came as an international and left as an even better player. And might be one of the most valuable players on the planet.
Will Skelton. Yes, correct.
So, like, Will Skelton was... It wasn't ripping up trees like he is now. Will Skelton came as a little bit of a lost cause.
Yeah, he had all of the right pieces, just in the wrong order.
Yes.
Like, he was not getting the most. And they got him to get the most out of it.
I think they dropped 20 kg off him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
enormous.
So you can imagine, if you're a player, you could sit down at Saracens, have a chat, and legitimately they'll go, we can't offer you what other clubs are offering you. Yes, that email from Adam said Tizard got offered more money to go to Saracens. Fair enough. But in many cases, you can totally understand, believe that Saracens would say, here's our offer. By all means, take more. But if you want to be the best rugby player you can be and make more in the long term and get a longer
deal and go to England
and play for England, then there's the deal right there.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind we've had Wasps, Worcester, London Irish, there's other clubs that we know are a bit creaky. One, again, I don't want this to be famous last words. Someone bring this up when Saracens go bust. But they seem to have everything very secure, infrastructure. They don't have a massive crowd, but they've got good business relationships. They seem to be a forward-thinking club that have all the pieces in place, and so you can feel fairly confident that you're going to have a job in a couple of years' time.
So I wanted to sort of move the conversation on a little bit because there was a player who was mentioned this week in the news who was at Saracens, and it just shows absolute hubris of a certain union. Rhys Carey has been released by the Welsh training squad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now, why they thought it was a good idea to bring Rhys Carey back to Wales when he's currently at Saracens, and we've just gone through a list of players that they've developed. But most importantly, the one they developed was Will Skelton. Because what's Rhys Carey? He's a phenomenal physical specimen that needs to be taught how to be a rugby player. And he should have stayed at Saracens. There's just a list
now. They wouldn't have been able to play him that because they have their own silly rules.
Exactly. So, like, here they are. Wales could have had a legitimate world-class prop because he's got world-class size.
Yeah, well, he's 6'3 and over 130 kg.
He's enormous.
Which is, there's not many props that hit those, not many players at all.
He's enormous. Players. And he must be fairly talented for Saracens to want him.
Yeah,
but because they're in stupid rules. Like, oh, well, you can't play for Wales, so you're going to have to come to Saracens and go, where exactly? Where do you end up? Cardiff or somewhere? I don't even know.
He went to Cardiff.
Yeah. Do you think he tore up trees there in the same way that he would in Saracens? Absolutely not.
The two things we know is he wasn't playing in the same level of games from Saracens. Mm. And in terms of his own conditioning, he's dropped out of Wales due to his failing to meet individual performance
just
targets.
Just on the statement that was made, where do you stand purely on the statement? Because there was a lot of ire thrown at the WRU for the manner in which they announced that he's no longer in the training squad.
Right, so first things first, the WRU were wrong to make him move clubs.
Yes.
Morally, ethically wrong, okay? That's the first thing. The 60-cap rule and the 15-cap rule, it's all wrong.
But not just morally and ethically wrong. Like, from a performance perspective, wrong.
Yeah.
It's objectively the wrong.
But it makes you
decision.
Think they don't care. You know, all they care about is having the names and thinking that they own the players. It's like a power play. It's like a dominance thing. So there's that. As for statement, don't care. you know, he's been released because he hasn't hit targets. He's a professional. So there's only so much. Like, from my point of view, the WRU acted like clowns, but he also must have acted a bit like a clown because he is a professional and his strength and conditioning is his responsibility. Now, just because the WRU don't have a organisation capable of making him become an adult, doesn't mean that he's off the hook for not being an adult.
Well, one of the things he said is that too much emphasis was placed purely on the number that's on the scales and not from his perspective, the actual performance he was able to do. And we've seen players like this before, that guys like Ben Morgan, Thomas Waldrum, don't look like they should be elite athletes, but they are exceptional rugby players.
I would like to know.
I would want to know what these targets were. Because in my
Franz Malherbe.
Yeah. Franz Malherbe's great. But
because
these targets, if they want him to do a sub-25 K time, he's never going to do that. But if they want him to be squatting 200 plus kg, 250, 300 plus kg, I'm sure. So as long as they're sensible relative targets, like as in for his position, for him as an individual, and he's failed to miss him, it is on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I completely agree that the WRU were stupid to ever take him from Saracens because they would get the WRU would get the best of their assets if he's being managed by Saracens. He would not fail to meet these targets if he was being managed by Saracens.
Yeah. I honestly can't think. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Can you think of a single player that's gone to Saracens and just absolutely bombed, like just come out as a worse player? Or maybe
there are some that haven't kicked on in the way that I imagine they might. Look, Alex Lewington, I thought might go to Saracens and become an England winger.
Oh, I thought Alex Lewington. Yeah, I thought
England centre.
Also thought he's been excellent for Saracens.
Oh no, he has been excellent. But he was excellent for London Irish.
I tell you the one, the French hooker, Tolofua, mate. Tolofua? Am I up?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be a world beater when he showed up at Saracens because of his size, and he never actually did it.
He went to is it Toulon now?
Yeah, he's somewhere
brothers
else.
Brothers at Toulouse, I want to say.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
So I thought, that might be the only one.
I think he's still a.
You know, for Saracens to be interested, for you to go through the interview process, for you to end up at Saracens, for you to play for Saracens, there's obviously something about you. But ultimately, he's got to take responsibility for it.
It did feel pretty harsh, the public statement saying he hasn't met the fitness requirements. Equally, and he's a professional, and if that is the reality, I don't necessarily have a problem with the reason being given. And we're quite often we're saying, there's too much cliche stuff, we're not getting information, we don't get anything, and then when someone does give you pure professional information, cold.
But by the way, we'd be happy to kick a player out of an international squad for holding the wrong views on something, but when it comes down to conditioning, his actual job, it's like, whoa, hang on a minute, this is beyond the pale. No, this is why you do leave squads. This is exactly the reason.
I have absolutely no problem.
Nope.
And I'd have no problem with there being a fat camp or weak camp or slow camp. Like, whatever. You name the camp. If people are not, if they're not cutting it, you need to be told you're not cutting it, guys.
Like, yeah.
Did they have a fat
what
camp?
What would you call a
Sedge
camp for players that weren't?
Not specifically, but there was, and we when I was there, we had various different S&C and head coaches.
This is that time of year right now. I mean, obviously not in France because they're still playing, but for most of the clubs in France aren't playing anymore. This is the time now where some players, and we all know, we all played with those players, just let themselves go. Let themselves
just
go.
Switch off.
I mean, but they need that, don't they?
It's easier to never get out of shape, I would say.
It is.
Just don't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, as a man who gets out of shape quite easily, don't do that.
You lose it a lot faster than you gain it. That is true.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope, he's just leave Wales now. If he's not in the Welsh squad, there's no point in staying there. Go to France.
Yeah.
How many players can just keep going to France, particularly when they've got a GIF quota system? You're talking about this. Just go to France.
We're not talking about the sixth choice prop here. We're talking about a man who's 130 kilograms.
Yes.
Like all the guys have said, go to France. Tom Pearson, he can go to France.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at London Irish,
Ray Jackson, he can go to France.
There's probably three or four.
Yeah.
Like there's not many. I've got a 40-man squad in front of me. Arundel can do what he wants.
Although he's going to be at England. So he's an incredible player. And you.
But the exception, like the Jack Willis.
There's an argument that Loader is better value than Arundel because he will not be playing for England.
For a premiership team.
For a premiership team.
Yeah.
Loader's a great player.
Loads of great player. There's loads of good players there. Loads of good, loads Bernard, of good ones.
Jansi van Rensburg's an excellent centre.
Sinti's very good.
Paddy Jackson's ace.
Jansi van Rensburg really is. He will be a steal for whoever gets him.
Yeah,
because he can play 10 as well. He can distribute. Yep. He hits hard. He is a really, really handy player. Does it look like Gonzalez, the Argentine back row?
Mm.
Fantastic.
He is off to France, though.
Is he already off to France?
I think so. I think, yeah, it's amazing. London Irish, considering there's a salary cap in place, have assembled some squad.
Fischetti, the loose head, I like him.
Yeah. I mean, they've really done very, very well. So it's a shame. It is a shame.
Mm.
But, you know, you can deny reality, you can't deny the consequences of denying reality. And that's where we are.
Unfortunately, yes.
Just whilst we're talking about Rhys Carey, do you want to talk about all the players that have left Wales? Just the list of them is enormous.
Yeah.
So I don't have it to hand, but Jared Evans has gone to Quins. That would be one. I mean, we're talking about like 12 or 13 per team. Like, people have been released. Like, has Lee Halfpenny retired, or has he just been released?
Don't know.
Alan Wynne-Jones is listed as released on a list of players which has retired players on it.
He just released.
Just released, it says.
Thomas Francis is going to Pro D2, but apparently signed a contract with Ospreys, and they're saying they want a fee if they want him to be released from it.
God, I've got the list.
Yeah, listen to this.
So, Cardiff, Max Llewellyn, who goes to Gloucester, Jared Evans to Quins, Dylan Lewis to Quins, Dimitri Arhip, Kirsten Dacey, Willis Halihola, Jason Harries, Ray Lilo, Harry Millard, Kirby Myhill, Josh Navidi, retired, Joe Peard, Reese Priestland, Brad Thayer, James Ratty, Lloyd Williams.
And it's only so Ratty. Ratty's going to Ospreys, isn't
Ospreys,
it?
Ospreys. Lloyd Williams going to Trailfinders, and then the three at the start going to the Prem. Dragons, Will Rowlands to Racing 92.
Nice.
Will Rowlands is a bloody good player.
Shouldn't have wasted his career, or part of his career, with Dragons. That's for sure.
Ewan Davis, Rob Evans, Ben Fry, Lennon Greganes, Ben Mower, Hugh Taylor, Sam Davis to Grenoble, and JJ Hanrahan.
Sam Davis, for a lot of people, was one of the most talented fly halves that they've ever played with. Mm, never kicked on.
Never. Yeah, he's a good example of not getting the best. Ospreys, Stephen Myler, retired. Tian Thomas Wheeler goes to Japan. Joe Hawkins to Exeter.
Right, do you know why Joe Hawkins can't play for Wales, but Llewellyn can?
Market rate offer.
Signed six, before 25 caps. Before that.
Not
no.
quite, almost. It's because Gareth Llewellyn is his dad. Have I just made that up?
The Lock.
Yeah, so I'm sure his dad is The Lock, Gareth Llewellyn, right? But Llewellyn hadn't received a Wales cap. So he doesn't get caught by the 15 cap rule.
Ah, so he can go.
Or 25 cap rule.
Yeah.
But because
Hawkins has.
Oh, yeah, I'll have the cap, please.
That's ridiculous.
I know. Cheers, lads. Thanks.
So Hawkins, Ethan Roots to Chiefs. Gareth Anscombe, gone. Dan Lydiot.
I mean, just
Dan Lydiot goes from Ospreys to Dragons.
Yeah.
Talk about out of the frying pan into the fire.
So just on some of these players, right? Like, Anscombe's a great example. The Ospreys have waited. I mean, Welsh Rugby has spent so much money on Anscombe getting him back and ready to play. And now, is he even in the Welsh squad, I wonder?
He's probably in the widest squad.
Yeah,
they called up a huge number, didn't they?
What happens to him? Where does he go next?
Who knows?
France.
Who knows? Well, he's released. Alan Wynne-Jones released.
Yeah.
Bradley Davis retired. Dan Evans retired. And Thomas Francis to Provence.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
which is where Gopeth is going.
Provence, yeah.
Aix-en-Provence, lovely town.
Well, yeah. Well done, boys.
Very pretty.
A bit too
town.
Near Marseille for my liking, but I've heard good things from you, Tim.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Thomas Francis will enjoy that. I'm sure his conditioning will be spot on.
It's top notch.
And then Scarlets. Scarlets bring in Johan Lloyd. Other than that, they lose Jovan Sebastian to Edinburgh. Sione Kalamafoni, he's still going.
Still going.
To Van. Dane Blacker to Dragons. Corey Baldwin to Dragons. Yeston Reese to Ampthill. And then all of these boys are released. Taylor Davis, Lee Halfpenny released. David Hughes, Alex Jeffries, Will Griff John, your boy Jay.
Another guy ripping it up with Sale. Ripping it up with Sale. Did we ever see him again? No.
Reese Patchell released. Phil Price released. Tom Price released. Lewis Rawlins released. And Aaron Shingler retired. That must be 50 players.
Article in the Rugby Paper as well today, just about because thinking about the reality for most of those guys. Gary Graham is now without a club. And has no job because he had a group for someone. Yeah, Carcassonne in France. However, the deal's been scrapped because on the last day of the season, it wasn't even points differences, it was on the head-to-head, they got relegated. So it's been scrapped. So Gary Graham. So the point is, this is professional sport.
And also, he's a qualified electrician who works in nuclear power plants, so he'll be all right.
He'll be okay. But it's a rough time. It's a rough time. And all the more reason why, just when you think about these ridiculous rules which have limited either the players' earnings or where they can play and the options they have, it must sting all the more.
But by the way, on this particular podcast, we've named four front row whose careers have absolutely crashed by going to Wales. Reece Carey,
yeah.
Will Griff John,
yeah.
And maybe Thomas Francis hasn't crashed so much, but he wasn't winning Heineken Cups,
yeah.
Wherever he's gone, and the boy Hooker / Prop went to Dragons. Who I mentioned at the top of the show. What's his name? Greg Bateman.
Bateman,
never to be seen ever again.
Here is another question. What do you know about Ralph Rimmer?
Ralph Rimmer, I know something, but only what you know.
He's a new independent advisor. Appointed by the government to work on the future sustainability of rugby union.
So the first question, there's many questions, isn't there? But the first question is, why does the government need an independent rugby union advisor?
Good question.
Is the most pressing question here.
I don't know how to feel about this. I know rugby is not being governed very well and there's lots of things going bad, but does the government need to get involved?
This is exactly it, right? Exactly.
What's going
on? Why? It's just, I mean, if there was a group of people who I guarantee do not have the solution to rugby, it would be the government. But it's weird. Ever since COVID, I never even heard really of the Department of Sports, Media and Culture. I mean, they meant nothing to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how it should be. I don't really want to know. I don't really want government departments too involved in my life in any form. Absolutely. When it comes to like what I do on a Saturday on a field, I just don't need the government involved in that. But since COVID, it's like we basically listen to everything these guys say.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's because it's like a dependency culture. They needed so much money from the government. They needed so many favours. They needed to keep the game afloat. And all of a sudden, you've got this sort of weird relationship with them. The government do not need to appoint Mr. Rimmer, whoever he is. He might be the best guy in the world, but if he's that good, just get rugby to employ him directly. But why? I mean, actually, and why do we need? More to the point, like, this can't be the best guy. This simply can't be the best guy. If you wanted to find someone with some unique ideas about the game, you'd ask us. You would simply ask us. There's no way the government has the resources or the time or the dedication to actually really research who is needed. Do you know, I mean, if they're really serious, they'd get someone like Mark Evans. That's who they'd really get. But again, that would be a waste because you want Mark Evans actually in the game. And is this guy getting paid? I mean, how much of my tax money is going to this guy?
He won't be doing it for free.
Yeah, probably.
It can't be. Why is taxpayers' money going towards this? It is ludicrous. It's ludicrous that the rugby authorities are so incompetent that the government feels it needs to. Why do they feel they need to hold rugby's hand? I don't know.
I mean, that is
there's so many things wrong with
it itself, and the fact that I mean, do the RFU have a choice in this? Have they said yes? Please, the government, please bring someone in.
I have no idea.
Or
is this because the government had all the loans to all the clubs? They've now got a justification for just going, look, we're putting our own guy in there. I genuinely have no idea. Whichever way round it is, it's that alone is justification for some. Some people to fall on their swords.
Yes,
get the hell out.
Yes, that's a really good point, isn't it? If the government are having to divert time from things like, I don't know, defence policy and health policy to appoint someone to tell you how to do your job, you might need to leave your job. I think that's a very, very fair thing to say. I mean, the government should not be involved in this one bit. I don't want Mr. Rimmer involved unless he's through one of the legitimate rugby channels. The government is not a legitimate rugby channel. I hope it never becomes a legitimate rugby channel.
State rugby. Well, mind you,
state rugby.
State sponsored rugby's done all right in Ireland.
Yeah,
that's actually worked really well in Ireland.
Romania, yeah. The golden years were state sponsored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe we want it state sponsored. Maybe I've got it all wrong. It's hard to know, actually. Would I want it state sponsored, or would I want it driven by the corporate values of the RFU sponsors, which seems to be the only values that they care about? I do not know. Mm. I do not know.
You mentioned your friend and ours, Mark Evans.
I did.
Who had something to celebrate this week?
Fiji drew and won again.
Yeah.
And didn't Moana Pacifica win as well?
They did.
They beat the Tars. But the Fijian Drua, they qualify for the playoffs.
What
is
a story.
Second year running?
What a story.
Is it not first
this
year?
This is their first year in the tournament.
I thought it was the second year in the tournament. Have I made this up?
You may be right on that.
I think the second year in the tournament. Maybe first year in the playoffs?
Not sure.
But... Well, it's some story.
First or second year.
Yeah. And led by Mark Evans, which, you know, it just shows we need... Why are our best people not in the game? I do not know.
Well, he's in the game, and he could be doing a great service for rugby.
Yeah.
By making Fiji a force on the international stage, or playing a role in helping.
And do you know what? There's probably a lot less obstacles in his way over in Fiji than there would be over here. So, yeah, it makes sense. And he's got one of the most talented player pools and a pretty cool brand to be working with.
Very cool.
Yeah, so they actually launched in 2017.
But they were in the internal...
NRC Australian, yes. Which is the same as... is it Ranwick and Brothers and...
I don't know is the answer. I simply don't know.
Yeah. Some of the famous Australian teams...
There's only one famous Australian club, isn't there? Randwick. Nothing else is famous. One club in Australia, if one can tell.
It's fair to say that 8 out of the 12 teams make it to the playoffs. It's a bit like the Premiership in that sense. It's a bit... that was 6 out of 11. No, so this is 8. This is 8.
And where have they finished?
It's a bit like the Heineken Cup.
Yeah.
So it's not... So to come 7th out of 12... it's good. Hey, they're in the playoffs. That's great.
Yeah.
And I think they'll play the... How does it work? Oh, they got...
They do not.
They got more regular season games.
They play
yet,
the Crusaders. Not. I think they.
Oh no, they play. They play the Double Dongs. That logo is just. So the Drua travel to the Double Dongs.
Yes, my beloved Hurricanes just missed out on the top four, so don't get a home semi final. So play the Brumbies.
My beloved Highlanders didn't make it.
Tough year for Highlanders.
Who do I support again?
Blues.
Big into Blues, yeah.
Auckland Blues.
They play against the Tars.
Tars, yeah. Easy win for your boys over in Auckland.
It's a tough one for me, that, because the Tars have my favourite kit in rugby. Mm. When the Tars have their kit just right with the light kit on the dark shorts. Oh, yeah.
And the logo, the little shrub flower thing.
Yeah, love it.
But so New Zealand occupy 4 out of the top 5 spots in Super Rugby, so they are still... Yeah. Dominant.
Very much so.
And the Chiefs looking very, very good.
Chiefs have been excellent
now,
this year.
Really did you have. See, talking about the Waratahs, because obviously their kit is an exact rip-off from New South Wales, do you see that clip which came out this week?
What, the first 3 minutes of State of Origin?
Yes.
Brutal.
Who enjoyed that? Come on.
I enjoyed it.
Why did you enjoy it, Tim? Because you're horrible. Because you think cheap shots are fun?
I thought it was deserving of some kind of sanction, but I'm not going to deny I really enjoyed watching it.
Yes, agreed.
So it got me... It certainly got my blood pumping and my heart racing.
Yes,
I'll put it that way.
That's what you want to feel.
It made me feel alive watching it. I didn't particularly enjoy it because I just thought it was a stupid cheap shot and it should be a red card for the player who went in with no arms.
Well, it should be rugby union, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
But this is a different sport.
But it definitely made me feel alive.
Well, that's all you want to feel in our horrible mundane lives. Just make me feel alive for 5 minutes, please. God.
Right. Well, when I'm chewing down on my bugs, I want to feel less alive. I just want to feel less.
And I'm watching rugby in the pod. Right. So I tweeted this. Have you been impressed with my restraint on Twitter?
Yeah, it's very good. And I enjoyed your thread earlier. Which
questions.
Was your questions and your... Yeah, you made some probing thought, some thought-provoking questions. I mean, admittedly, when you don't say inflammatory things, and I'm not talking about you, I'm talking in generally on Twitter, you don't get as many interactions.
No, you don't.
Which is the shitness of the algorithm.
We'll talk about that thread in a minute, but I actually found what I was responding to fairly inflammatory.
Yeah.
So... I tweeted, right, that for all the stuff that we say about rugby values, this is the driver of the sport, we're here to make great people. Actually, no, the driver of the sport is this brutality, which is exhibited in the state of origin. Now, I think people misunderstood this, because they say, no, these cheap shots, are, you know, people who play like that, we don't want them on the field, it'll stop mothers. Literally, it said, someone said it'll stop mothers sending children to rugby, right? Fine, that's exactly what we want to see. That means it's working. But the cheap shots don't inspire people, do they? It's the reaction to the cheap shots. How do you handle it? Who handles it? Here's the ultimate example of this. The World Cup final when England win it. Nobody remembers Matt Rogers' cheap shot on Josh Lucy, do they? But everybody remembers Josh Lucy taking his vengeance. And that's why it's important. You know, it's not the fact that these guys came in and did something illegal. It's the fact that they're going to face some consequences at some time. You know, the challenge has been laid down and it's up for those boys now to meet that challenge. And there's something very strange about the modern rugby world, which is like, oh no, leave it to the officials. We must leave all dirty play to the officials to a degree. To a degree, officials have to officiate. But on the other hand, players have to take things not into their own hands as such, but there's a way to rise to a challenge. That's what was exciting about that clip.
And that's the bit that I really like. It should be dealt with by the officials, but taking the law into your own hands, but within the confines of the law, is one of the best things that you can possibly do.
So the first thing you want to see...
That is one of the hardest things. Yeah. Like...
The first thing you want to see is obviously the player not be injured, right? But the second thing you want to see is if he is injured, pretending not to be injured. Like, he doesn't care one bit. He stands up, chats his mate, and maybe threatens the other guy for the next breakdown. That's kind of what you want to see.
Yeah.
Rugby has been built on this ethos that you pretend not to be injured for 80 minutes. You always have your normal face on. That's what you're meant to do. You're meant to have your normal face on, no matter how awful it is. And that's why it's a hard sport.
Stoicism is a masculine virtue.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So, which reminds me, actually. No, we'll get onto that afterwards. Talk about the thing. Let's briefly touch on what you talked about. You found inflammatory, and it's only one person tweeting something.
Yeah. So,
it's not a big thing. It's not a big rugby story or anything. And this is
no.
And if you're outside of Twitter, you wouldn't even know that it was happening.
But if you're inside of rugby, and if you're inside of coaching circles, I think you'll understand exactly what's going on. So, and it's not all bad. So. Something I've mentioned for a long time, there are a lot of coaches out there who really emphasise skill over everything else, and it dovetails nicely into the RFU's view of how they'd like rugby to perceive, which is a skill-based game, no, an evasion-based game with lots of skill, rather than what it really is a game about bullying and contact, so and intimidation. So there's a coach at Sale Sharks called Andrew Brownhill. He runs the Preston.
Yeah, I thought it was New South Wales.
Oh, is he moved? He definitely used to be at Sale Sharks.
Perhaps, yeah. He used to be at the University of Lancaster.
Lancaster, yeah. So they... Preston.
Phil's alumni. Paul Preston.
UCLan.
Central Lancaster. UCLan, that's it.
So,
and he's now in Sydney.
Very good coach, by all accounts. Yep. So no issues. No issues with that. But there is an issue with one of the things that he tweeted.
He tweeted, and I will explain what he tweeted this to. But he said, "Hey Siri, what's an example of how to destroy a young person's confidence?" And it's a clip from a rugby player. I don't know how old the rugby player is now, but when they were 16, they were at a National Academy selection camp. So a very good player.
Yeah. Bath,
England under-16s player. Well, Bath University is where the camp was.
Ah, got you.
The coach at England under-16 level sat down this lad who's called Sam. You might be able to, if you have the time in England.
And he might have made it. We might be talking about Sam Burgess or someone. I got no idea.
Sam Burgess. Yeah. All roads lead to Sam Burgess. This is how he pops up in this podcast.
The coach said to this England under-16 player at a national camp, quote, and this is what this coach said was destroying a kid's confidence. He said, destroying confidence? Yeah.
Yeah.
Quote, look, Sam, you're a nice kid, but nice means nothing in rugby. If you want to make it, you better toughen up. So this lad said, it wasn't my skill set or my abilities that were lacking, areas that I could improve. I was lacking. I wasn't tough enough. I remember walking away feeling so much shame. Am I not the kind of person who can make it in rugby? What's wrong with me?
Well, the answer to that, right, is he might not be the kind of guy that can make it in rugby. Now, no, that's wrong. Not the kind of guy who can make it in all rugby. I mean, we're talking about the national team here. So what I really disliked about this was that reading a lot of coaches on Twitter, a lot of these sort of new age, skills-based, it's all about learning and great coaches.
Oh, I can tell you who wrote it now. Sam Smith, former Harlequin and Worcester player.
Oh, I remember him. Yeah, okay. Right.
He did make it and then quit to finish. Set up a coffee shop.
Isn't it Wendell's Yard or something?
Yeah.
What a memory.
I think it might be that.
Find out what his coffee shop is. I think it's Wendell's Yard. So, right. So, these coaches, because they're all about...
Wayland's Yard.
There you go.
It's better than Marlon's Yard.
So, these coaches, who are all skill-based and all about learning and development and positive attitudes and positive conversations, they seem just to ignore a whole branch of the game, which is the fact that it is about being aggressive. And one of the things which I've noticed when I've gone to watch Sale play and train, actually, like, it's not the skills that impress me. The skills are amazing, by the way. The skills are absolutely incredible to see, like, first time. Just when they're training, they're incredible to see. But the aggression is just off the charts. And they can turn it on and they can turn it off. I guarantee that coach is certainly not saying, you know, you're a nice lad, as in that's detrimental off the field. He would have been talking only about on the field. And it is so important that you are aggressive. I mean, look how militaries are trained. They always talk about, like, aggression first. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to be throwing punches, but you need to be aggressive. There's no two ways about it. So these coaches are very much, they're very much, because their skill set is teaching skills, every problem that they see, if your tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And that's kind of what's happening here. But I think because they've got this mindset, coaches like that tend to get over-promoted within the system. And I wonder if...
Well, it was thought of as old school.
Yeah.
And out of touch.
Out of touch.
Things like that.
Yeah. And I wonder if you were a coach in a university, if you've ever even considered coaching aggression, how would you do it? Have you ever tried it? Do you not think it's important? I mean, to me, it's absolutely key. But you've got all of these coaches who are ignoring one part of the game. And one of my feelings is they want to ignore this part of the game because there is a conflict between how they see the recruitment for grassroots working and how they see the pro game working. There's no two ways for me. You need huge amounts of aggression in the pro game. That's where Sam Smith was.
The coaching aggression is like, aggression is kind of both a personality trait and it's a behaviour.
Yeah.
And you can't change the personality trait of an individual.
Well,
some players are more placid, and that's fine. But you can, because it might not be. You're saying aggression, but actually it can be. No. When you tackle someone, you need to put all of your weight into it. You need to put all your weight through your legs into your shoulder, and you need to smash it.
More of a technique.
And that would come through as aggression, because you'd level someone when you tackled, rather than taking a passive hit.
I've got a really good friend. So this is the first thing which I did. I've got a really good friend who was in the Royal Marines, and he's a officer there. So the first thing I did, and he loves his rugby, whatnot, is I just text him with this thing. I said, look, in the Marines, do you coach aggression? He goes, no, we don't coach aggression, but we build an environment. Well, hang on. I'm kind of paraphrasing. He said he doesn't know if you can coach aggression, but they put you into an environment where if it is there,
it comes out. Yeah.
Right. So if they're putting them in this situation and that aggression is not coming out, then I think there might well be a problem, in the same way that you can't really be a Royal Marine if you don't have that level of aggression, at least in some parts. I know what you're saying, because the example I give is when I played at Old Winions, the aggression that those boys had going into tackle was something which I just didn't have, and I really appreciate it. And that's like a culture thing that they have at that club. Mm-hmm. And you can sometimes see these players who are really good. We've got one at Talk H, and the way he hits, like, I just don't have that level of aggression. I'm aware that I don't have it. So someone said to me, you don't have aggression, you're not going to make it sell sharks. I say, yeah, that's 100% true. That just is a thing which
And it
which
isn't
is true.
Always aggression, because my brother would be the first to say, and you know, he played Premiership for London Irish and for Sale, he'd be the first to say, I was a much better player than him growing up. But it wasn't aggression. But there was definitely a mentality element.
Edge, isn't there?
There was a mentality that I did not have, which limited the level at which I could play.
Yeah.
Because, and it was...
You know it when you say it.
It was almost pressure and being able to deal with the stage and the pressure. And I went inside myself, the higher up I went and the bigger the crowds and stuff. And he just loved it. But he always says, I don't know how you didn't play if I managed to play. He's 6'6".
There's
fewer people of that size, but definitely there was something that I didn't have that meant that there was a ceiling to where I play, and I think that could have been the case for this Sam Smith guy, and it could be the case for many players.
And
that's okay.
And
a coach, if a coach sees that and has the experience and knows that, then giving a player that information, as in the thing that's going to limit you, is X or
yeah.
Y.
Why is it crushing to tell a player the truth? Because that's what this coach did. He told the player the truth. Mm. Now, the feedback I got directly from Mr. Brownhill was like, oh, well, that's just lazy coaching. And I thought, well, I don't know how else I'd phrase that. I mean,
I'm not sure it is, because of there are certain characteristics that you can work on. Exactly your point, Tim. Aggression, it does potentially fall into both, but I'm taking it as the meaning of the kind of natural characteristic. It's like someone telling me that I'm never going to play in the NBA because I'm not 6 foot. I'm 5'8". Like, I know that. You don't need to tell me that. Like, that I'm never going to run a sub 10 second 100 meters. Like, is it harsh to tell me that I'm never going to run a sub 10 second 100 meters? No, it's a fact of life.
Yeah,
like, it's that kind of like matter of fact statement. That's not lazy.
I don't think it's lazy at all. I can't see why that would be lazy. I see why it doesn't. So I think the RFU would love people to shut up about aggression, because it does two things. If we're talking about aggression all the time, I don't think there's many women that want to come into the, you know, like the ladies game. And I think there's you look at the tackle law changes, that's definitely a way to sort of de-risk the game and de-masculine it. So it opens it up to more people that don't necessarily want that really aggressive contact type sport. And there's 100% move away from that. That's why they want touch, that's why they want all these other things in the participation side of the grassroots game. I understand it, that's what they're doing. But it means that you get these coaches elevated who only talk about skills, and they completely neglect the other parts of the game. And when you go and play...
Right, that's interesting.
Yeah, when you go and play an Old Winions or a West Hartley
pool, you're self-selecting the characteristics you want to promote, and you're deselecting traditional or alternative elements.
Yeah, if you're just focused on your skills and you come up against West Hartlepool, who we played earlier on the season, you're going to get your head kicked in. Simple as that. Like, we are a skill-based team in Didsbury. We got battered by Oldham twice because they were aggressive and we didn't meet that challenge, and that's something which you've got to learn as a team. These things are... If you have the aggression, you get over the game line, by all means, open up your skills book. But you need that aggression first and foremost.
The thing that kind of, because I mean, you've just got me thinking now. And the thing that I have an issue with about this is there's talk all the time about, oh, we need diversity and all the rest of it. But you kind of
yeah, not that diversity.
Yeah, yeah, no. Some people might call it old school. Some people might call it archaic or whatever. But it's still on the spectrum of the different flavours that coaches can bring to rugby, the influences that some people need at whatever level. And if you're just sweeping that out of the way, you're going to lose a massive something. Well, I think we already have.
Yes. Well, ultimately, it's a contact sport. Rugby is a contact sport. Imagine telling a boxer he doesn't need aggression. I mean, you need aggression. You need incredible skill sets.
You need lots of speed. You need lots of...
But you do need aggression. And I can't...
You need agility. You need a reaction, but you need a lot of aggression.
Yeah, and I don't know how could you say to a boxer, like, yeah, by all means, just work on your skill. Don't worry about the aggression. You'll be a good person. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me at all. So the RFU don't want to be promoting that. The thing I did find a little bit egregious about this was the fact that it was intrinsically bad that a coach fed back, you're not aggressive enough, because it destroyed his confidence. Well, first of all, the point of a team sport is not to look after everyone's confidence, is it? It's the point of the team is to make the best team.
And what I might add to Sam Smith as a 16-year-old, and it's brutal, it's tough. 16, I've got my son going through the DPP process for Sale Sharks at the minute. It's brutal on these lads.
Yeah.
But it's necessary, but brutal. But what I might also add to Sam Smith is, not only as a 16-year-old, and this is tough for anyone, I found myself in the same situation Sam Smith's in. Not a national camp, but Southwest. I got cut, and I took it really badly. I would say not only was he not aggressive enough, he wasn't resilient enough either.
Well, this is interesting, right? So would they say that we destroy a kid's confidence if we said, your passing's not good enough, you'll never make it? I mean, the never make it bit is a little bit silly, but I'd need to hear the actual conversation. Or, you're just not big enough, you'll never make it. Because if he's 60 kilograms, it wouldn't matter how aggressive he was. You know, there are certain things that are...
Depending on the position, of course.
Well, I looked at the smallest rugby player, and they're 74 kilograms.
Yeah.
So 60 kilograms is not doing it.
But 60, if you're 60 at 16, you'll be fine. If you're 60 at 22...
Not happening, is it?
You're not making it.
It's not going to happen, right?
You'd be a better jockey than a rugby player.
Yeah, exactly right. So there are some prerequisites that you have to meet. But the implication was, you are bad because you mentioned this one thing and that destroyed the confidence. If I had a criticism of that conversation, and of maybe the DPP, I don't know how they do it, it's maybe not that you've made the kid less resilient, but you've not taught them to be resilient in the first place. So what's the quote? You prepare the kid for the road, not the road for the kid. So if the kid is not that resilient, maybe they shouldn't be in the DPP to start with. You know, maybe you shouldn't be exposed to top-level competitive sport. Go to your club. There are loads of ways to play rugby. And if Sam Smith wasn't... I mean, he was, so we can ignore that, because he played professional rugby. And I hate saying Sam Smith. Like, you know, there's actually... It's just... It's this quote. There are loads of rugby players that I've met who are incredible rugby players, skill-wise. But they just don't have that extra mental... And there's nothing wrong with that. That's why we have leagues.
There's nothing wrong with that. And just to bring it back round,
that's why I play at level 7.
I'd actually say that there's probably, and we've talked about this before, and we mentioned Jonathan Haidt and all sorts of things, and the coddling of younger people. That is one of the things that rugby actually... It's one of the reasons why, if you're a parent, get your kid playing rugby, because it prepares them for life.
Yeah.
And that resilience, which is probably on the decline, if we're honest. And this is easy. You can't help but sound middle-aged and like, oh not
three
as good
as
the young people these days. But I think there's...
In the basement.
I think there is hard evidence to back this up. Levels of resilience are declining.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about both sides of my mouth here. I do actually think that it is not good to have all these kids going through DPP programmes and going through academies so young.
I think too many are too early.
Yeah, I think stay at your club.
It is a race to the bottom to get early. Like football now, so many kids get taken on at 4, 5, 6 for a few months.
I think rugby's very
rugby's
different.
Not there.
No. So the way
still...
rugby does it, and I'm just talking about Manchester is, and Broughton Park, the under-15s team had like 10 or 11 guys in the DPP programme, but there's like across Lancashire, Cheshire, and this is going over to Merseyside, and North Lancashire up to Preston and all. Anyway, so it's a big area, and there's probably 300 kids that have been selected, and they get extra coaching. They still play for their clubs. They still train for their clubs in the week. They just go and get coaching every fortnight for the whole season, and then they play some games. And now they've cut it down to, I think, about 40 or 50 guys for the whole area. So 250 of those lads are kind of haven't been told, right, that you're not good enough, you're gone. It's like, okay, we've had to make a choice. Mm-hmm. We'll have another look at you next season. But they've had the whole season just doing training, and now it's been cut to
how many of the Brockport lads are in the last 40?
None.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Bloody hell. Well, at least you don't have the problem that Leicester Tigers have with their England internationals now. So
I'm very, very proud of all of the lads. And what I'm really most impressed with, we're talking about resilience, is how they've all gone, right, that's it. I'm on it this summer. So some of them are going, I'm getting on, I'm going to be in the gym for the next three months. Yeah.
Good lads.
Some of them are like, you know, some of them are like, right, I'm going to just pass 50 passes off each hand every day. And they're all going, right, seem to be like, right, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Good. That is
good.
Which is what you want.
Yeah, that's exactly what you want. That's exactly what I want.
And so, that's the sort of stuff as a coach you can help and facilitate. And like,
yeah.
Show me that energy. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting that you spotted it, because JB, only two people even tweeted or quote tweeted the tweet in question. So it's not a...
Oh, I've got a real thing for coaching Twitter, because I think most of it is nonsense.
So two questions this has made me think about this conversation. Number one, how many coaches... So it's been nearly 10 years since I've kind of worked regularly with coaches, but how many coaches have you interacted with, like, from a personal level, not on Twitter, how many of you actually been coached by or coached alongside, who are the type of the Twitter type coach, who totally ignores aggression and just does all on skill based?
Without doubt, the people that were running the RFU level 2 coaching course.
Because from my experience, I've never, of my coaches of all of my years, from being an under 10 up to playing a decent level, they were never on that side of the spectrum. And I know the Sedgley coach. Sedgley have just got promoted from National 2 North. I know bits about the coaching setup. There's some very good coaches who would be on they would follow a lot of the skill type stuff and the way that Sedgley play now, but they don't do it. They don't take the trade off that you mentioned before. So, they are a hard team, and they have skills as well.
One of the best coaches that I worked with, right, young. I'll say his name, Jason Duffy, right?
Duffy, who I played with, you guys played with.
Who I thought just was such a good coach for me to improve my skills, was very skill-based, but also one of the most aggressive lads.
Yeah, yeah.
The single most aggressive lad.
Playing with him was brilliant, and also a nightmare, because he's so mouthy and so aggressive and could back it up. It's hard as nails.
Director of rugby at Talk H, a phenomenal coach. In fact, probably more knowledgeable than even Duffy. When he plays, you can't contain him. Contain him, because he's just super aggressive.
Yeah.
Now, Duffy,
I think it's a very... my perception is there is a very small minority who are too far down that.
Well, I think what happens...
It probably balances off, because certainly the coaches that I played most of my rugby under were arguably too far down the other way.
Well, I think what happens is, if you are actually coaching in a rugby team of a high level, you've probably come from as a high level player.
Yeah.
If you're not that high level player, but you've gone down the coaching route.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, how do I do this? Well, let's go to the RFU. That's when you start to develop this, we need great people sort of attitude. But I do know quite a few coaches now, because like we're 10 years on from when you were playing regularly. And it's a lot more prevalent. It's a lot more prevalent that we need... that same coach, Jason, will regularly say now about his team, Broughton Park, when he was there, we're here to produce great people too. And we've had lots of arguments about that. It's like, no. You produce a rugby player. You know, the great person is like a side effect. Like, if that's what you're after. But actually, do I want to create great people?
Yeah.
Not really.
Did you read the Sale Sharks announcement? I'm sure it was this one. I've read it in the last week. I'm sure it was Sale Sharks announcing Tulusa Vianu.
Yes.
Which said...
I knew the...
Just the press release. There was a statement in there that was like, Well, first of all, he's an absolutely brilliant human being, I think it was.
Was this from Sanderson?
Of course it was.
So Sanderson has signed Manu Tuilagi purely on the strength of his personality.
That was a quote,
as a human being. He never even spoke to Sam McIntyre about rugby, which I think is borderline... I mean, that's like negligent.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't it? Who else is he nearly signed? Has someone like said, wait, Alex, wait. Have you asked him if you can play?
I heard this bloke was just speaking so well outside the co-op in Chorlton.
Yeah.
He's such a good human being.
I think this is lies. I mean, it is obviously lies, isn't it? Alex Anderson is definitely talking about rugby.
It made me think about, you know, we always joke that the All Blacks were tricking everyone.
Yeah.
When they said, you've got to clean the changing room. And like the All Blacks never cleaned their... They did one photo shoot where they were cleaning the changing rooms, and now every team spends half the time cleaning changing rooms, and the All Blacks are practising their line out.
Exactly.
The no dickheads policy, I think, as well.
It's a complete con.
It's a lie. The All Blacks are getting all of these like aggressive animals out of the other teams so that they can have all the aggressive animals in their team.
Their actual rule is only dickheads.
only dickheads.
Oh, we have no dickheads here.
Aaron Smith has so much testosterone in him that he needs to relieve some of it in airport bathrooms.
I think I know. I might know where some of this comes from, this deception. So you get, or if you level one, which is kids, or if you level two, which is adults, or if you level three, which is like, it might be close to a degree course.
Yeah, you have to be coaching a team.
Yeah, you've got to be coaching a team. It costs about £700. It's a big old qualification, level three. And then you get level four. Do you know about level four?
There's only
you get invited to do it.
So I know somebody who was doing level four, and I won't mention his name, but he is a coach. He's still a coach now.
Stuart Lancaster.
And on the level four coach was Ali Heaper.
Yeah.
So they got all these premiership coaches, because that's effectively who does this, premiership coaches. They're all in a room. And he said that we were all just lying to each other because no one wanted to give away what they actually did. So Ali Heaper saying, yeah, well, as Exeter, we just play what's in front of us, really. I mean, you know, we empower the boys to make... And like Exeter are like the most systematic team in the Premiership. Like the line-up forwards have got the first five line-outs written on their hand. And he's like, yeah, they just play what's in front of them. There's not really a structure that we use in Exeter. 21 pick-and-goes later, yeah, there's no structure here. They've just randomly decided this. So I think that the Sanderson thing is a version of that. You think we talk about Baxter does the same thing. Oh, we just go conversation. I want to know the man. No, you don't. You've given him a questionnaire about the laws and, like, you know, scenarios. What would you do here? Can you memorize this play? That's what you've done. It's just lies. It's all lies. It's
misinformation, disinformation.
It's complete disinformation. Sanderson's lying to us when he says,
yeah,
he's can you believe Manu Tuilagi just happens to be the greatest person Sanderson's ever met, but coincidentally can play inside centre to international standards?
Yeah.
You sound like that Mariana Spring from the BBC, Phil. Misinformation, disinformation. Get BBC Verify on Alex Sanderson.
This would be a good job for them. All premiership coaches. Baxter can have community notes on him too, because I don't believe a word that he says.
Well, let's segue into it.
There's one more thing on this that got me thinking, which is I think that telling someone you need to be more aggressive is absolutely fine. I take no issue with that. Occasionally, I think you might actually have to, like, that would be the wrong thing.
Yes.
And that would be, you'd actually, for some people, you might have to say to be less. I do not want you being aggressive.
And by the way, would that affect a player's confidence? You're too aggressive. You're not going to make it.
Well, there's two framings of this that I would like to give. One being the ultra creative and skillful player who just doesn't have the aggression. If you told them you're going to make it if you're not aggressive, they don't make it, and we are deprived of someone like Danny Cipriani or George Ford or Marcus Smith or Baptiste Saran.
Mm.
Like those players, if they were having to jackal against pick and goes, they are never going to do it. They will not be playing rugby, and you lose all that talent. Or the other one, the Will Addison, Ollie Thorley, Sam Underhill type, who actually maybe someone should have said, you need to dial it down a little bit. Otherwise,
10% off, please.
Yeah, and there's probably, like, those are three examples that we know. There are probably plenty of players who actually never made it. They never made it past under 20s because they were dialed up too much, and someone probably should have said, like, if you want a career in this, you are going to have to step it back.
All people that did make it and were exceptional, Dylan Hartley lost about a year of a career.
Yeah, great point.
Including some World Cup and Lions tours.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, I raise this with a certain England international that I know. But, aggression is a key part of their game. Like, imagine Tamara Harrison with no aggression.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got lovely skills, though. What?
But lots of people... So, they're in 9 times out of 10, more aggression is good. But it's not always... It's not the be-all and end-all for everyone.
Yeah.
Not Marcus Kremer.
This
weekend.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Oh, by the way, did you see the Bordeaux result?
Yes.
What was the score?
Bordeaux won. Mm-hmm. 32-25.
It was 25-all with 5 minutes to go. And Bordeaux.
And that was after. So Bordeaux were down 17-8 at half time and then went out to a 25-18 lead. Then Lyon brought it back 25-all and then Bordeaux scored at the end.
Is Jonathan Kapoku playing for Lyon today?
Joel, sorry. He was not.
No,
that's why they lost.
Now, that is a guy who was not enamoured by Saracens.
Yeah.
On his way out, he was not overly effusive with his praise.
Mm.
Well, he had loads of locks ahead of him.
He did. They were fairly stacked in that area.
Yeah, they were stacked. Let's just wrap up then. You just reminded me mentioning Mariana Spring and BBC Verify and stuff. Did you see the whole what is a woman thing going on this weekend?
I did.
Isn't that amazing?
I saw it when it first came out. I paid for it.
No, I haven't. Oh, for Daily Wire thing. Did you see what happened?
No.
So the, what?
I kind of know the principle.
Yeah, Daily Wire on Thursday or whatever said, right, we're going to put our film What Is a Woman up for one day, and Twitter censored it, and everyone was like, hold on, Elon Musk, I thought you were all about free speech. What's going on here? And Elon Musk was like, no, this is wrong. And it was like a classic case of the Streisand effect.
Really?
Where the Streisand effect. What was the origin of the Streisand effect? Was it something like
Barbara Streisand?
Yeah, I know it was Barbara Streisand.
She tried to get an injunction. Or stop people seeing her house.
Seeing her house. That's it. And then more people saw her house than she could ever have imagined had she just kept her mouth shut. Well, it was that. So it's like 170 million people or something have watched it in the last.
Yeah, it had 66 million days. Views, didn't it, on Friday?
Bearing in mind that that's more people than watched. Any Marvel movie.
It's quite incredible. I watched it when it first came out.
In an opening weekend.
Wow. Yeah, I watched it when it first came out, and I thought, yeah, I mean, it's okay. It's quite amusing, you know? It is very amusing, actually. It's one of those films that
I found it quite uncomfortable to watch, I'll be honest. Some of the stuff in it is just I found, like...
Are you surprised? Does any of it surprise you? It doesn't surprise me.
Some of it surprised me, yeah.
I sort of knew everything which was going to happen. I'm too keen into this stuff, so I was kind of numb to it.
I didn't know it all. I didn't know what they do in some cases. But anyway, so I just thought that was kind of...
Hopefully we'll get censored by Twitter, and then everyone will find our podcast. 66 million views by Friday.
Yeah. unfortunately, I don't think... rugby needs that sort of publicity. What could rugby do to...
Just watch French league. That's all I'm going to do for
them. Do you think people in... You're saying, like, the future is French.
I just don't
see many people in England giving a toss about French domestic rugby.
We could not watch it. We tried to watch it.
Well, here's
we
what
had
I
a
think.
Subscription to the channel that does show it, and
if
we
you're
couldn't watch it.
A club rugby fan, okay, your experience of French club rugby is much like being an NFL fan 20 years ago, which is you have a niche little sport, and there'll be a few blokes that you know who also watch this niche sport, and that will be it until it kicks off again.
Yeah.
I think that's how...
If more English players go there, it'll be a little bit like when Gazza went to Lazio, and then suddenly Channel 4 started having... Lazio! Channel 4. And what's his name?
Graham Hunter?
No, Richardson. What's his name? Someone Richardson. Who has the gig I want on the World's Strongest Man? What's his name?
The only Richardson I know is Charles Richardson from.
The guy he used to like have the. He used to,
I know exactly.
He used,
what you
to,
mean,
he used to be sat on a piazza with his
coffee,
Gazzetto dello Sport, and an espresso.
Yeah,
talking about Italian football. And Paul Ince went there, and Gazza was there, and David Platt, and a few well-known English players was enough to get people interested in a foreign domestic league.
Who was that?
James Richardson,
that's the guy.
Yeah, who was the last English player to play in Italy?
There's one playing there right now.
Smalling, is he Seville?
He went to Roma, didn't he? And Ashley Cole went to Roma.
Is Smalling in...
I think he went to Roma.
Smalling was playing in one of the finals, so it was either Roma or Seville.
Sevilla, yeah.
Yeah, he was definitely Roma.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There you go. No, I know nothing about
football. Smalling set to extend his stay until 2025 in Roma.
That sounds like a cool place to extend.
It does.
Extend your stay.
It does.
Definitely.
Why not?
And I mentioned I watched Air and any more? Any other recommendations? Podcasts? Books? No. Films?
I've done nothing this week except for CrossFit. That's all I've done.
I read Brave New World finally. I've never read that before. But what? Aldous Huxley was a flipping smart man.
What is that?
It's well, a lot of people say we're entering into a period that's like George Orwell's 1984, Ministry of Truth and all that. 100%. Talking about Mariana Springs, definitely an element of that. But I think there's an argument that what we're moving towards is more like Aldous Huxley's dystopian view of the future with a kind of medical tyranny and genetic modification.
I would like that. I'm just reading a brief synopsis of it.
You're in favour of the policies, or you'd like to read the book?
Brave New World. I will read the book. I'll put it on my list.
Yeah,
I'm reading Moby Dick.
Oh, nice!
It is.
Is it hard going?
It is really hard going. Some of the writing is absolutely beautiful, but so much of it is both written in an opaque way, certainly for me, so I find it difficult to read, and so much of it is on the biology and classifications of whales.
There is JB, I love that.
Page after page
on the classification
in
of
Latin.
Whales.
So tell us something. No, tell us something you learned.
Difference
between porpoises and
very little,
porpoises and dolphins,
sperm whales, and it goes into so much detail. Because I've got no frame of reference to it, it just kind of washes over me like an irrelevance. Whereas you would actually get many of the references.
So, one of our listeners and good friend of mine, David McDonald, you've seen the gift that he gave me in Birmingham.
I don't think so.
The most ridiculous gift in the world. So, because I'm quite into aviation facts and nerdy stuff, he bought up 22 files of aircraft fact sheets.
Are they the ones that are in your lounge? Yes.
But here's the kicker. I already own them. And they're in my mum's. So now I've got 44 files of aircraft fact sheets.
The other thing I am doing at the moment is playing Tears of the Kingdom, the new Legend of Zelda game, which is amazing.
Can't really relate to that, but I'm sure it's very good.
What platform is it on?
The Switch.
Yeah, I think Louis's got that.
It is.
So you're the second person I know, my 15-year-old son and you playing Zelda.
I am sure. Ask him about it.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's having an amazing time.
Where do you find the time to do that? Because I'd love to play Football Manager still, but I can't.
I'm having to carve out time. Like, I've not got very far. I've done so little of the main quest, partly because I've not spent very much time on it, but partly because I'm just building stupid little contraptions.
Yeah.
So I have nothing pop. I've not listened to many podcasts. In fact, I'm not listening to podcasts at all recently, which is weird. Do you know why that is? I've got my sleep routine dialed in so tightly now because that's good for CrossFit. that I don't go to sleep with podcasts for the first time in 15 years. I just go to bed.
It's a good idea.
I think it is a good idea.
I tell my kids, I make my kids leave their phones downstairs on a school night, and I wish I should do the same.
Well, somebody was mentioning today on some Instagram reel or some such thing, and I think I'm going to try this. He has two phones. I think it's Chris Williamson, actually. And he said he has two phones. One has his Instagram, all his social media on it, but it's got no SIM card, and he just has it in the house.
It's just Wi-Fi, so no one can contact him.
Yes. And then he has his main phone, so you can WhatsApp, you can communicate, you can do emails, but there's no social media on it.
Mm.
I thought, that seems like a good sort of way to go forward. Because I can spend hours.
Well, I have my work phone and my personal phone, and when I'm working, I just don't have my personal phone with me.
Yeah.
So my work phone has got no social media, no nothing. It's got work WhatsApp, but that's it.
So
it's just business.
Yeah. So I've done no interesting podcasting. I've done no interesting reading, but I will give you a pop culture reference, I guess. So I've been out this weekend, been exploring the delights of Manchester, and there was a proliferation. I mean, first of all, the dress code out in town has just gone downhill. No one has any pride in how they look now. Like, the amount of lads that are out this weekend, in particular young lads, I mean, I get it, it's just the fashion. Nobody wears shoes. Their shoes are gone, so just forget shoes now. Scruffy T-shirts. I mean, I'm not talking about scruffy. I mean, properly faded scruffy T-shirts. But the smartest guys out in town now are probably the guys that have got tattoos from, say, their, like, a full sleeve, occasionally all the way up the back of their head, neck, ears. But they actually will then wear shirts and have their teeth done and have a bit of pride in their appearance. So it's like the heavily tattooed crowd with lots of pride in, at least some pride in their appearance, and then all the other young lads just seem to be, I don't know, it just seemed to be...
It was a mad weekend, because like last night, Elton John, Arctic Monkeys and Coldplay and 80,000 football fans coming back to Piccadilly.
It was amazing. It was
not back to Piccadilly because there's no trains.
No trains. Oh yeah, of course.
It was nuts. I was in town yesterday.
Yeah, I was in town. It was great.
It was nuts.
It was, it's like the OK Corral. It was brilliant.
Would have been absolutely bonkers. Yeah.
One pod for me.
Yeah, go on. Because I was going to say I need one, because much like JB, you spent hours just like working on a boat, and it's thankless. But I'm going down back tomorrow morning to Shropshire to my new field, and
yes.
I've got a petrol strimmer, petrol hedge cutter, and I'm just going to be doing that all day tomorrow, cutting back all this stuff. So I need some podcasts to listen to.
I recommended you this when we were having a beer the other week. But Multipolarity.
I've been listening to it every week. It's excellent.
It's really good.
I agree.
Acquired is a nice long form one.
Yeah, Acquired's very good.
Oh, that's the business one. And I listened to the NFL episode of that, which I loved.
I want to listen to some more episodes, some of the interesting ones.
Lockheed Martin.
But they're so long. They're so
perfect
long.
If you're streaming a field.
Very good for streaming a field.
But no, have you listened to Multipolarity?
No, I haven't.
It's really good.
It's really good.
It's very good.
Yeah, you would like it as well.
Right, well, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, nice. Sweet. Right, thank you very much for listening. Egg Chasers, patreon.com/eggchasers to support the podcast. We'll be here with you every single Monday.
Yes.
All through the summer, as we have been for nearly 10 years. Let the boys play.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.